It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What's up, football fans? Kevin Smith back with you here on FFSN on the call sheet for episode 51. We took a break last week as I escaped the not so pleasant weather here in the Northeast, headed down to Florida with the family for a little bit, did some Disney action and a little bit of time at the beach, had a nice little getaway. After 50 consecutive episodes of the call sheet, it was time for a little break, but I'm back and ready to do 50 more, man. And I hope that you'll join us here on the Fans First Sports Network. If you get an opportunity, subscribe to our YouTube channel. We got some great stuff coming up with draft on tap, and you know, we're going to carry that all the way through the 2024 football season. So speaking of the draft, if you're listening to this episode on Thursday as it drops, we are exactly 3 weeks from round one, opening night, which is always an exciting event, one of the best non-sporting events in existence. And this is really the first week where we're going to dive into draft coverage. In the second part of today's show, I'm going to do one player for each of the 32 NFL teams that I think they would benefit from drafting. Not necessarily a first-round pick. Some of them are first-round picks, but just a guy who I think is a good fit based upon what all 32 NFL teams need. But before we do that, let's do, as we always do, and honor a player who wore the number of the episode. This is a special player this week. This is episode 51, and I'm going to profile Sam Mills. A lot of listeners probably remember Sam Mills' tremendous story. I mean, you want to talk about a story in resilience. I mean, that's really sort of the theme of the story I'm about to unfold here for you, the Sam Mills story. Resident of the state of New Jersey, where I'm a resident as well and where I've been a football coach for a long time, Sam Mills went to Long Branch High School in Central Jersey. My school at Ocean City, we've had some really good battles with Long Branch the last couple of years. Had a great playoff game with them up in 2019. Up at their place. They have a really cool field. It's kind of bookended at either end zone, one by the high school and another by the middle school, and it gives it a stadium effect. It's a cool place to play. Sam Mills played his high school ball there. He then went to a D3 college, Division III school, Montclair State College in New Jersey, right? Why did Sam Mills go to a D3 school? Because he was 5'9". And coming out of high school, he was 5'9 and about 210 pounds. And as a linebacker, that didn't give you a lot of options. So he went to D3 Montclair State, put on some weight. But, you know, you can't, unfortunately, put on some height. And he stayed at 5'9". But he was the conference defensive player of the year three straight seasons. And as a Division III All-American, it earned him an undrafted free agent tryout with the Cleveland Browns in 1981. And Mills was cut. And that was probably, for most players, be the end of the story. I mean, for a D3 guy, and much less a linebacker who stood 5'9", just getting an NFL tryout was a huge deal. But Sam Mills was determined to play on. And so he eventually found an opportunity with the Toronto Argonauts of the Canadian Football League, where he was also cut. And as they say, again, that should have been the signal for him to get on with his life's work. And he eventually found a job teaching high school photography, interesting, and assisting as a football coach at East Orange High School in New Jersey. Now, interesting twist of fate here. In that year, 1982, a new startup football league began, the United States Football League, the USFL. And Sam Rotigliano, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, who had cut Mills during his tryout the year before, really liked what he'd seen of Mills in camp. And, you know, he thought Mills was too small to play in the NFL. But when the USFL started up, Rattigliano called an old friend of his, Carl Peterson, who had taken the job as general manager of the USFL's Philadelphia Stars, and he suggested that he give Mills a look. And so Peterson reached out, and Sam Mills signed and showed up and was absolutely sensational at Stars camp, and he made the team. And he quickly earned the nickname the Field Mouse because, as Peterson put it, he was like a mouse running around a field of elephants, and the elephants wanted nothing to do with him. And so in his 3 years with the Philadelphia Stars, Sam Mills became the anchor of the team's defense. The Stars won 2 USFL championships in those 3 years. Mills was named to all USFL teams each year. And he's been described as arguably the best defensive player, along with Reggie White, who played in the USFL, in the short history of that league. And so after the Stars won the 1985 USFL title, their head coach, Jim Mora, yes, that Jim Mora, was signed on to coach the New Orleans Saints. And Mora brought Mills with him, where Mills first donned the number he would wear throughout his NFL career, number 51. And he quickly became the anchor of the defense in New Orleans, where he was a member of the vaunted Dome Patrol. I mean, old school football fans will probably remember the Dome Patrol, the stellar linebacking core that led a great Saints unit in the late 80s and early 90s. And Mills earned 4 Pro Bowl appearances with the Saints. And Mora, who coached 15 years in the NFL and will forever be remembered for his famous playoffs rant. One of the great coaching quotes of all time. When Jim Mora talking, somebody asked him about the Colts or chances of making the playoffs. And he was incredulous because of how bad they had just played. Playoffs. That Jim Mora. Jim Mora called Sam Mills the best player I ever coached. And, you know, Mills left New Orleans as a free agent in 1994. He played a few more years in the league for the Carolina Panthers, who had just, you know, they just started as a franchise before he retired in 1997 at the age of 38. And Sam Mills was a starter up until the very end in Carolina. He even made a 5th Pro Bowl in 1996 at the age of 37. I mean, that is remarkable to be a starting Pro Bowl linebacker up in the league into your late 30s. Incredible career for Sam Mills. And after retiring, he became a defensive assistant for the Panthers and was on that coaching staff of the Panthers team that had a Super Bowl run in 2003, lost on a last-second kick to Adam Vinatieri and the New England Patriots. And tragically, Mills was diagnosed with intestinal cancer, and he died in 2005 at just 45 years old. His number 51 jersey was retired by the Panthers, and then Mills was posthumously elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2022. It is a pretty amazing story for a guy who stood just 5'9", was offered no college scholarships, was cut by a Canadian Football League team, was teaching high school photography before he'd ever play a down in the NFL. And yeah, it's just resilience. I've coached lots of guys, lots of young men who were not very talented, but boy, did they love the sport and love the game. One of those guys is currently playing sprint football at the University of Pennsylvania, Jake and Sarah. Jake and Sarah stood about 5'8 and weighed maybe 180, 185 pounds soaking wet. And yet he was the starting inside linebacker and running back on 2 of the Ocean City teams that I coached that made it to state championship final games, including one game at Long Branch, the alma mater of Sam Mills, where Jake and Sarah played every snap on defense and carried the ball 29 times on offense in a game we won 21-20 in a thrilling playoff game. Jake and Sarah was a warrior who at 5'8 and 180 some pounds just loved to play. And he loved it so much. He was a team captain. He was an all South Jersey selection. He was an incredible player. And he went on to get admitted to the University of Pennsylvania, where he's currently playing sprint football, which, if you don't know what that is, it's football where the weight limit is 180 pounds. So, you know, everybody's 180 or less, including the linemen. Really cool opportunity for smaller guys to go play college football. So resilience. Yes, Sam Mills is a phenomenal story in resilience. And unfortunately, a life cut too short by the horrific disease that is cancer. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. And on the other side, we're going to turn our attention to the NFL draft. And as I said at the beginning of the show, I'm going to do something similar, actually, to what I did about a month ago before free agency kicked off. I did a show, you know, maybe 5 weeks ago where I suggested one free agent signing for all 32 NFL teams. Now, actually, I went back and I reviewed that show the other day. You will not be shocked to discover that most of my suggestions did not pan out. I mean, I can't believe that NFL executives were not listening intently to the call sheet and taking me up on my suggestions. I did hit on a few. I suggested that the Commanders sign Frankie Louvu, the linebacker who had been in Carolina, and they did. And I pegged Jacoby Brissett to the Patriots. The big one I nailed was Patrick Queen to the Steelers, which, quite honestly, I never thought would happen. I just threw it out there as a pipe dream, you know, hoping that my Steelers would sign him. I never really expected the former Raven to jump ship to the rival Steelers. I still think that signing is the coup of free agency. But that's it, man. I suggested 32 free agent moves, and three of them actually came to fruition. You know, thankfully, these are not legal and binding suggestions, or I would probably be criminally prosecuted. So, okay, after the break, I'm going to do something similar for all 32 teams with the draft. Who is one draft prospect each team should consider taking, or one guy who would be a great fit for each of the 32 NFL teams? And, you know, many of these will be round one suggestions, but not all of them. They're not predictions on who each team will take. I'm not making predictions, simply suggestions on guys who I think will be good fits. So a month from now, hey, we'll look back at this episode and I can make fun of how wrong I was on many of these suggestions. So, all right, after the break, we're going to hit that up. So come on back, everybody. All right, Kevin Smith back with you on the call sheet. And let's jump right in to part two, where we're going to pick one draft prospect for every one of the 32 NFL teams. Who's one player that would be a really good fit for each team? And we're going to do this alphabetically. So let's jump right in with the Arizona Cardinals, who are picking at number four overall. And these won't all be first round picks, but it's hard to do this exercise without pegging Marvin Harrison Jr. as the guy for the Cardinals, because at number four, the chances are pretty good that Harrison will be there, given the quarterback obsession in this league and the fact that the first three teams picking in this year's draft are all quarterback needy and will likely go the quarterback route. That will tee up Harrison for the Cardinals. And, it's my contention that he is the most pro-ready player in this draft. And if you're lucky, if you're talking about football players, in my mind, there's no way that Drake May is a better football player than Marvin Harrison Jr. But the way football works today, May probably has more value, and that should benefit the Cardinals. So if Harrison is there at four, the Cardinals would be crazy not to take him. All right, speaking of receivers, the Atlanta Falcons, I think that they would benefit tremendously by landing Ladd McConkey, the wide receiver out of Georgia, probably in round two. McConkey's projected to go somewhere in the middle of round two. Atlanta picks 43rd overall. That's about the 10th or 11th pick in round two. They've got an arsenal of weapons on offense. Obviously, they just brought in Kirk Cousins. You got some talented skill players, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Bijan Robinson, and adding a really slippery slot receiver who can operate in the middle of the field would be a great add for the Falcons, and they go get the hometown boy, Ladd McConkey. Baltimore Ravens. Well, I mentioned that they lost Patrick Queen to the Steelers. They've got a void there at the linebacker spot. And I think Jeremiah Trotter, the linebacker out of Clemson, would be a great replacement. You could probably get Trotter in round two. Trotter and Roquan Smith together would give Baltimore another fearsome linebacking duo. So the Buffalo Bills are next. And man, the Bills have made some interesting moves this offseason. They have really jettisoned some veterans who were key to their success over the last three or four seasons, most recently shipping Stephon Diggs off to the Houston Texans, and they lost Gabe Davis in free agency as well. So they need a wide receiver. They pick at number 28. It's a deep draft for receivers, and you're going to be able to get a good one there late in round one. The guy I'd focus on if I were Buffalo is Keon Coleman of Florida State, a big physical receiver who I think fits the profile of Buffalo's offense. I think Keon Coleman to the Bills is a nice fit. Carolina Panthers, they're up next. They also need a wide receiver, and particularly in the slot. Now, they traded for Diontae Johnson of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that will certainly help them out. They have no first-round pick, but they select at number 39, and there will be some good picks in the draft around that area. I think that they should target, although Ladd McConkey would be a good pick for them, for that for sure, but I think that they should target Florida's Ricky Pearsall. I mean, he's a do-everything type of slot player, the kind of guy who makes your quarterback better, and that's really what they need. They need guys who can get open and make plays. They badly need guys who can help Bryce Young. So with Johnson on the outside and Pearsall in the slot, they would have added two of those guys this offseason. All right, Chicago Bears are next. I mean, everybody, I think, understands that they have their sights firmly set on Caleb Williams. I read the other day, and I don't know, I'm not sure how true this is. I haven't really seen it authenticated yet, but there were rumors that the Commanders offered them to swap the number one and two picks in the draft and also Washington's number one picks in 2025 and 2026, and the Bears turned them down. If that is true, that is a haul. I mean, I would have taken that draft. If I were the Bears, I would have taken that draft, or I'm sorry, that trade, drafted Marvin Harrison, and then used that draft capital that you just acquired, plus the number nine pick, which the Bears hold, to maneuver back into the top five or so, and then take my quarterback. Maybe it's McCarthy, maybe it's, you know, Daniels, whoever they like. That's partially because I'm not sold on Williams. And that offer by Washington was huge. But Chicago is set on taking Williams, so enough said there. All right, Cincinnati Bengals. A guy I think that they should really target is Cade Stover, the tight end out of Ohio State. They need help at the tight end position. Mike Gesicki is their you know, penciled in as their number one tight end there. You know, he's kind of bounced around a little bit. Miami, New England, now in Cincinnati. Gesicki is kind of a move tight end. He'll play in the slot, but they could use a guy who can put his hand down. And Cade Stover, tough, great blocker. He can catch the ball. Not a real field stretcher, but a prototypical old-school NFL tight end. Probably get to Stover in round three, really bolster that tight end room in Cincinnati. The Cleveland Browns, they need linebacker help. They currently list Devin Bush as their starter at strong side backer. There's a guy who was pretty much cut loose by Pittsburgh, cut loose by Seattle. I don't think they want to go into the season with Bush as their starting strong side backer. The problem for the Browns is they don't have their first pick till number 54 in the draft. And I think the two best linebackers, Peyton Wilson and Trotter, will be gone by then. So if they want to wait a few rounds, maybe to the fourth round or so, a guy who's kind of limited athletically, but's a really good run defender is Ohio State's Tommy Eichenberg. And I think Eichenberg could develop into a good two-down strong side backer behind a solid front like Cleveland's. Dallas Cowboys, very thin at running back. Rico Dowdle is now currently listed as the starter on their depth chart, a guy that's been in the league for 5 years and doesn't yet have 1,000 career rushing yards. They're not likely to target a running back in round one, but they could stay in state and opt for the University of Texas's Jonathan Brooks in round two. A lot of people think he's the best running back in this draft. Denver Broncos, they're in a pickle, man. They need a quarterback. At the moment, their quarterbacks are Jared Stidham and Ben DiNucci. But unless they blow someone away with a huge offer, I don't see how they get up into the top six or so, which is where I think you need to go to grab the top four quarterbacks in this draft. Williams, May, Daniels, McCarthy. Those guys are probably going to go in the top six because I think Williams, May, and Daniels are probably going 1, 2, 3. And then somebody's going to trade up to get McCarthy. And maybe that somebody is Denver, but their trade capital is limited. Unless they want to offer next year's number one and more, you know, I don't know what their plan is. And maybe they really love Stidham. Maybe they're not going to draft a quarterback. So given their situation, I would not reach for a quarterback like Bo Nix in round one, and I wouldn't mortgage the future to trade up to get a guy like May. So given the fact they were awful for much of last year on defense, I think the best thing they can do is find the biggest impact player that they can and take him. And for me, that could be Iowa corner Cooper DeJean. Because in a division where you have to play four games a year against Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert, you'd better be able to cover. And DeJean at number 12 overall, that makes a lot of sense for Denver. All right, Detroit Lions. I think they need safety help. I really like Jaden Hicks from Washington State. I think he's a tough, instinctual, and versatile player. And he's got good robber skills, man. He really sees the field. And Detroit loves to play those robber schemes where you drop a cover two safety down to the linebacker level to look to rob those crossers. Playing that rat roll, man, that's all the rage in coverage in the NFL these days. And I think Jaden Hicks, second, third round guy, the Lions could really target him. All right, next two up, Green Bay Packers and Houston Texans, alphabetically, they're both looking for offensive tackles. And in some order, I can see them both targeting J.C. Latham of Alabama or Amarius Mims from Georgia. Man, Mims to Texas or to Texans to play opposite of Laramie Tunsil would give them two potentially all-pro tackles. I think Mims' ceiling is through the roof. He only made 8 starts in college at Georgia, so he may need some seasoning. But man, Mims to the Texans would really be, would put the capper on a heck of an offseason for that franchise. Indianapolis Colts, they need corners. They're drafted in the middle of the first round. I think maybe the top guys like Nate Wiggins and Terrion Arnold and DeJean are probably all gone by then. They could go wide receiver in round one, but in round two, I think there will be some solid corners available. A guy they might target is TJ Tampa of Iowa State. He's big and long and physical, and the Colts play a physical style of coverage. He could be a great fit there. The Jaguars, they need center help. They did sign Mitch Morse, who was cut loose by the Bills in free agency, but he's 31 years old and being cut by Buffalo, not a good sign for his long-term future. So they probably won't take a center at number 17 overall where their first pick is. So they could dip into that well in round two. And I think West Virginia's Zach Frazier, he could be the guy. He'd be the future of the position there. And he wouldn't have to start right away with Morse in the fold. That might be a great landing spot for Frazier. The Kansas City Chiefs, they've really, they're the Super Bowl champs, and yet we keep talking about how they've been depleted at the skill position. They did sign some speed in free agency, but man, if they really want to turbocharge their offense, they could target Xavier Worthy, the wide receiver out of Texas, who just ran the fastest 40 in combine history. You throw him in with Marquise Brown, who they signed in free agency, and suddenly the Chiefs are back to having that Tyreek Hill type of speed on offense. Xavier Worthy, boy, he would be a weapon there in that Chiefs offense. Las Vegas Raiders. Well, I mean, they're yet to adequately replace Josh Jacobs. You don't see too many running backs taken in round one of the draft anymore. And this year, there really might not be a round one worthy back. So I think the Raiders could probably get Jalen Wright out of the University of Tennessee in round two. I think Wright fits their scheme. Good downhill runner, physical guy, can catch the ball a little bit out of the backfield. Nice fit for the Raiders. The LA Chargers, well, you got Jim Harbaugh there. They lost Austin Eckler. It feels like a Blake Corum reunion to me, man. I just feel like Blake Corum, the running back out of Michigan, he knows what Harbaugh likes to do. Harbaugh's going to want to be physical. Harbaugh's familiar and comfortable with him. Blake Corum in round two probably to the Chargers feels like a really good fit. The Rams, they need a quarterback. I mean, not right now because Matthew Stafford is still playing good football, but he's getting up there, man. Stafford's going to be 37 this season. That's hard to believe. Matthew Stafford, 37. He just still seems like a young guy to me. I think that it's time to look for, his replacement. And I don't think that Stetson Bennett, who's currently the backup, guy they drafted out of Georgia last year, I don't know if he's it. I don't know if Stetson Bennett translates to the NFL. So a guy that I think they can target probably in round three is Michael Pratt of Tulane, who was the 2023 player of the year in the AAC. I think he's very Stafford-like. He's smart. He's accurate. He's experienced. This is hard to believe, but Michael Pratt is the only four-year quarterback with the same team, meaning a guy who played 4 years with the same team in this entire draft. I mean, that really is a commentary on the state of college football these days. And he feels like a great fit for LA system and maybe the long-term replacement for Stafford. Miami Dolphins, weapons, man. You want to keep stockpiling weapons in that offense. You've got Hill. You've got Raheem Mostert. You got Jalen Waddle. How about tight end? They're a little thin at the tight end position. I think Jatavion Sanders, the tight end out of Texas, who's probably the second best tight end in this draft behind Brock Bowers. I think if you pair him with those other skill guys in this offense, he's a field stretcher. He opens up a lot of space underneath. You want to run that tight end down the seam and pull those backers and safeties out of there and create space in the middle of the field for Hill and Waddle. I think Sanders would be a great add there for the Dolphins. All right, the Minnesota Vikings and the New England Patriots, alphabetically, they are the next two teams on there. And I think they're in an interesting battle or maybe contest here over J.J. McCarthy. Do the Patriots want him at number three? Or are they going to go more with like a Jaden Daniels? But I feel as though, I mean, and maybe my thinking is sort of still rooted in Bill Belichick, the way Bill Belichick would think. But J.J. McCarthy really feels like a Bill Belichick quarterback. I don't know if he fits the current Patriots as much, right? And so I don't know if the Patriots are going to take McCarthy at three. But if they don't, I really think the Minnesota Vikings should make a move for McCarthy. I did a video breakdown for FFSN YouTube a couple weeks back on why I thought that McCarthy would be a great fit for the Vikings. Now, the Vikings pick at 11. They got to come up to get him. They acquired some extra draft capital. They acquired an extra first-round pick. So they got the capital if they want to make a move. So it'll be very interesting to see which one of those teams or if either of those teams lands McCarthy. New Orleans Saints, they're another receiver-needy team. They need a quality player that they can pair with Chris Olave. If Rome Odunze is somehow still there at number 14 in the first round, they should run to the podium with his name, but I don't think he will be. They could stay in-state and they could grab Brian Thomas Jr., but that may be a little bit early for him. So, I mean, 14 is kind of a weird spot for wide receiver where the best ones are gone and then the second tier maybe isn't there yet. But hey, if Brock Bowers is there, I mean, Brock Bowers can really, if he falls past the Jets at number 10 and slips to 14, he'd be a great tool in new offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak's arsenal. Kubiak had a ton of success with George Kittle in his time as the passing game coordinator in San Francisco, and Bowers is a prospect on par with Kittle. He would be a great add for the Saints. All right, New York Giants. They need a running back to replace Saquon Barkley. I really like Ray Davis, the running back out of Kentucky. I think he's kind of a poor man's Barkley. He's versatile. He's a good receiver out of the backfield. He's a decisive runner. He's probably a round three or maybe even a round four guy, but I can envision him, you know, as one of those later round running backs who turns into a reliable NFL starter. All right, the Jets. I think the Jets are kind of low-key stacked. You know, I mean, everybody sort of forgot about them last year because Rodgers got hurt like a minute into their season, and then they struggled all year long. But they've really strengthened their roster in free agency. They've made some solid signings. They got Mike Williams to pair with Garrett Wilson at receiver, Tyron Smith at tackle, Javon Kinlaw at defensive tackle. Then they traded for Hassan Reddick. It's a deep roster. And with Rodgers returning, I mean, they could be a dangerous team. So I expect them to take an immediate impact player in round one. Maybe even adding a stud receiver like Odunze. If Odunze falls to 10, maybe they add him, maybe some O-line depth. But I think that they can afford a luxury pick in the second round. And they really have to think about life after Rodgers. I mean, it didn't work out last year. There's no telling how much longer he can play. Zach Wilson, I don't think, is the answer. They got Tyrod Taylor as their backup, but he is a short-termer. So they do have three QBs if they want to go that route. But for me, I think they could spend their third-round pick on a developmental guy. I think the roster's deep enough that they can afford to cut ties with Wilson and take that developmental guy. And I think Spencer Rattler, the quarterback out of South Carolina, is worth that pick. I mean, Rattler to the Jets is a smart move. Rodgers won't feel threatened by him because he's a third-round pick. Rattler can sit and learn behind Rodgers and Tyrod Taylor, who has been a reliable backup in the league. I think that's a risky move, but a move worth making for the Jets. All right, the Eagles, they need corners, and they may get one early. I mean, Eagles fans love Cooper DeJean, and if he falls to them, I think they'll snap him up in a heartbeat. But if they don't, maybe they wait a little bit, and a guy that they could get probably around round three is Jarvis Brownlee of Louisville. And the reason I think that they could target him is he's one of the better zone coverage corners in the draft, and particularly in cover two, and that's the heart and soul of new defensive coordinator Vic Fangio's scheme. Fangio is a cover two guy through and through. And so whomever the Eagles take at corner, he'll need to be able to play some cover two. And Brownlee did that really well at Louisville. So if they don't get a marquee guy in round one, I think they could target Brownlee a little bit later. Pittsburgh Steelers, they will probably go offensive line in round one. I mean, Mims is in play. A center is in play. Powers, Johnson, Barton. Maybe they even I probably too early for Frazier, but you never know. But they also need wide receiver help, having traded Deontay Johnson to Carolina. A guy I really like for them in round two is Xavier Leggett of South Carolina. He's big, he's physical, he can win one-on-one. He'll block, which you're going to have to do in Arthur Smith's offense. And he can stretch the field, man. And if you put Leggett on one side of the field and George Pickens on the other, You're forcing defenses to make a decision about whether they want to stay too high and help on those guys, or if they want to drop a safety into the box to defend the run. Pittsburgh's going to be run heavy. So Leggett to Pittsburgh would be a nice fit. 49ers, Kool-Aid McKinstry, the corner out of Alabama, late in the first round to play opposite of Charvarius Ward. I think that's a great move for them. They need a corner. He's a physical guy, fits in with their mindset. And McKinstry and Ward together would give them two really solid corners. I think the Seahawks are going offensive tackle in round one, and they may have their pick of a few good ones. But Talese Fuaga of Oregon State, he's a guy they'll be familiar with. You know, Mike McDonald, the new head coach, he really knows the value of good offensive line play from his time in Baltimore. And I think he'll target a tackle in round one, and I think Fuaga is a good fit there. The Tampa Bay Bucks, they've got a couple starters at linebacker, but Lavonte David is 34 years old, and they need a linebacker to replace him down the road. So if they want to grab a guy that they can maybe stash for a year, put in on the field situationally, and have him learn from Lavonte David, I think Cedric Gray out of North Carolina is that guy, probably a round three or even round four pick. He's really fast and instinctual, but sometimes over-aggressive. He kind of runs himself out of plays. He can misfit his gaps. And he'd be a guy, man, you let him learn behind Lavonte David for a year. He's got super athleticism, and he may be a guy who turns into a long-term starter there at the linebacker position for Tampa Bay. All right, two more teams to go. Tennessee Titans. I think they are just a prime team for Joe Alt, the Notre Dame offensive tackle. They pick at number seven. All like Marvin Harrison Jr., one of the most pro-ready players in the draft. He feels like a Tennessee Titan. You know, the Titans went out. They got Calvin Ridley to pair him with DeAndre Hopkins. They've got some targets now for Will Levis, but they need to keep Levis upright. Don't overthink this one, Titans. Take Joe Alt, man. Going to be a starter from day one. Last team on the board, Washington Commanders. Fascinating. They have the number two pick. They supposedly offered a ransom to get up to number one, probably because they wanted to take Caleb Williams. So who do they like best at number two? Is it Drake May? Is it Jaden Daniels? I'm taking Daniels if I'm the Commanders. To me, he's a little bit more Cliff Kingsbury-ish. He's a little less risky. He's probably got some more growth to make than does Drake May. But I just think that he's a little bit more of a disciplined quarterback than Drake May right now. I think you can get really creative with him. I think Jaden Daniels, man, I think he'd be my guy for the Commanders. I have no idea what they'll do. It'll be fascinating to watch at the top of the draft. Because honestly, man, I think the draft will pivot on who the Commanders take. There's going to be a massive domino effect based upon what the Commanders do at number two. Or if they go a certain direction, you're probably going to have trade ups, and you're going to have the wonderful chaos that often ensues in round one of a draft unfold based upon what the Commanders decide to do. So there you go, man. as a quick rundown of one prospect for all 32 NFL teams. We are really diving deep into draft coverage. It's going to be intense draft coverage on the call sheet the next couple of weeks. So I hope you will come on back with us. We're going to have some guests on the next few weeks, talk about the draft from a lot of different angles. It'll be fun. So for Kevin Smith, this is episode 51 of the call sheet. Rest in peace, Sam Mills. What an awesome story he was. I was glad we got to tell his story tonight. Hope everybody has a great week. Take care, everyone.